Space, the final frontier. Space Station Ashlyn sits on the edge of Federation space with its companion ship, the USS Delamis Christian. The space around them is full of mystery and strange wonders, where secrets are kept and danger lurks around every corner. The crew of the Delamis Christian must navigate treacherous waters as they work to protect the Federation. But as they peer into the unknown, they will discover that the line between friend and foe is not always clear. They will be tested like never before, and will face challenges that will push them to their limits. Join us on this adventure as we explore the farthest reaches of space and uncover the hidden truths that lie within the shadows. Tabletop Journeys presents Star Trek: Preservations.
Welcome, travelers. We are here with a cast of Star Trek Preservations. We're going to do a session re-zero, so I'm going to do the introductions here, and then when we get to the actual adventure for episode 8 portion of the recording, we won't need to do the introductions again at that point. So I'm going to actually start us with our ship's commanding officer. Take us away, please.
Yeah, hi everyone. I am Joe Harney, and I am playing Commander Sabine Tobor, the Join Trill Commanding Officer of the USS Delamis Christian, a Sabre-class Federation starship.
And the ship's XO?
I'm Adam Scaramella, and I portray Ocean Chilzilwer, the Delamis Christian's Andorian First Officer.
Excellent. And our second officer?
Hello, I'm David Rideout. I play Lieutenant Ovidian Tanari, the ship's chief engineer and second officer. Right now, I'm a little worried about the person who came in engineer asking where crewman Sarah Connor is.
I swear your goal is to make me break up every time we record. Take it away with our science department, please.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lacey Knutson, and I'm playing Lieutenant Narela Nealon, the Betazoid science officer on the Delamis Christian.
Excellent. And last but certainly not least, take it away.
Hi, I'm Glenn Myers. I play Lieutenant Camdril Najjar, the half-human, half-betazoid chief of security for the Delamis Christian.
Excellent. And I am Lee Wanika. I am one of the hosts of Tabletop Journeys, and I am the GM for this particular session of Star Trek Preservations. What we're going to do is do a little bit of a session re-zero. We've talked about it in the past. We've done them on the main show. We've done them in a couple different ways. This is going to be more of a direct and standard type of session re-zero. Shouldn't take terribly long, but I think it's really important given some of the big changes that have happened to the Star Trek Adventures RPG. As many have heard or should have heard, and unless you have been under a rock or if you're brand new to the show, Star Trek Adventures RPG just recently released its second edition. It is a backwards compatible edition. Modiphius has an amazing team of folks from the designer to the project manager and all of the writers involved. The artists and the layout folks have done an amazing job with the new book. I have only seen it myself in PDF while physical copies are starting to reach folks. It has not reached my doorstep yet. And every time the mailman comes with any kind of package, I'm like, is this it? Is this it? Is this it? So
like
very excited
on Christmas morning.
Exactly. Very excited. Dave, oh my goodness.
Oh, Dave had to rub salt in the wound.
I'm going to take that as an escalation and threat when we start the adventure.
For those of you who can't see it, Dave has received his copy and flashed it on the camera.
Yeah, wonderful. With the new edition, there are changes to the game. We are in the middle of our second season of the show, and we are all at various points in getting the materials. Some just got it recently. Some actually just got access to some of the materials today. Others of us have had it for a little while. So we're all in kind of different places. We want to just touch base, center, and talk about the changes that we are or have already instituted, clarify, make sure everybody's on the same page there, and then talk about the way in which we're going to convert to second edition. I can tell you the plan is definitely fully converted to second edition by the start of season three. But there are a number of things that either already have or may be phased in slightly earlier, depending on what's going on with three episodes left. There are some rules we may wait on. So that's what we're here to talk about today. So I've took a lot of breath at this point. So I'm going to start going to our cast and we'll let them talk about briefly or just a little bit on where they are as far as the new materials and based on what they've heard so far, what they're looking for in regards to this. And then following that, we'll go back and I'll tell you what we have changed. And then we're going to actually show some character conversions. We've got two folks who have not done that yet. So we're going to do that live for those two and just clarify and solidify with the folks who have already done so what they've done. Adam, where are you with the whole 2E conversion? What are some of the things you're looking forward to seeing and experiencing and whatnot?
Yeah, so I grabbed the PDF and I've been going through it, and I really like the way that they've laid out the rules. Previously, I didn't even have the books before we started, so there was a lot that I was playing catch up with on the rules, but I find that the new book is a lot easier to dig through as far as finding things. There's a handful of things in the index that don't line up exactly where they should, but you do a find and search. So,
excellent. All right. And Lacey?
I have just recently gotten the PDF and haven't had a ton of time with it, but so far going through it, I really like how it's laid out. And I like the things that I've read so far. It seems really easy to understand what they're trying to get at with the changes. I haven't converted my character yet, so I'm excited to get into that soon.
Awesome. We're going to go right to Glenn.
I was part of the Research and Tabletop Journeys episode on second edition before it came out, so I do have some knowledge, even though I haven't seen the new PDF in its final rendition. But in terms of our actual play and being ready, so far I have opened the BC Holmes tool and begun to figure out how to configure it to work with the second edition book.
All right. That's
my progress so far.
Sounds good. And Dave?
Okay. I mean, as we said earlier, I've gotten both the hardback and the PDF, and I've gone through it primarily through the character section. And I've liked what I've seen in terms of what they've added to the various species and what they've got to the character. It looks like the life path system is still there. And, you know, from first edition, I've loved the life path. So I'm glad to see that's still there. Done some fiddling around with Tanari to update them to second edition. I am looking forward to some of the simplifications they've made to the rules with second edition, removing some of the more fiddly bits, especially with things like extended tasks and such.
And Joe?
Yeah, so I got this quick start guide early on when it first came out, and one of the characters in there was a Trill, so I was able to use the information in there to start the conversion process. So before the PDFs for the second edition was even released, I was about 96% completed, put a little few touch-ups on it, and added some additional traits and confirmed that the talents I had already selected were still available and worked in second edition. And so I am completely good to go for 2E and looking forward to it.
Awesome. For my benefit, obviously, as part of Tabletop Journeys, as deep in the weeds on STA and its publications, very much like Joe, when the Quick Start came out, one of the first things I noticed, because I knew the kinds of things they were talking about, it, conversion should be very easy. And they have the kind of quality of life changes that, to some extent, we were largely doing here on Preservations anyway. So I felt that it made sense to do, at the very least, character conversions pretty much as soon as information was available. The goal today and part of this session ReZero is to make sure everybody's on the same page. We get our characters 100% converted because it does not impact the interaction with the game rules in any way. A 2E character can operate within a 1E ruled game perfectly. No changes. Nothing needs to really be worked. The only thing that really comes up, I think, as a big difference would be the way stress works and the way conflict resolution with damages on weapons and such. As far as the people, character sheets, crew members, Starships is a separate discussion. I've done a couple conversions as well as a couple character creations on my own, back of the house, done some interesting things with NPCs, some of which you may see later today in our recording session, that were done, again, 2E style. So NPCs and NPCs will likely be 2E versions. But the plan is we're still going to operate on the 1E rules, definitely for this session, and then we'll talk about a few other things as far as when we make those conversions. So jumping right in, one of the biggest differences that I have noticed is the species trait. In 1E, you had a species trait that was basic. It covered like some mechanical pluses, minuses, and some general information about what it was to be a Klingon or a Trill or a Denobulan, so what have you. In 2E, that still exists. However, there is also a species ability, which is effectively like a brand new talent. In 1E, many of those talents still existed, though slightly worded slightly differently in some cases, but they were talents you had to choose, and they came out of your total talent pool. Like if a character only has a maximum of 4 talents, and you wanted to be a species that had 1 species talent, you literally had 3 general talents and your species talent. It created this bottleneck that meant in order to be a proper Klingon, you had to not do other things that most other folks could do. In some levels, great for game balance, terrible for narrative. If your goal is to make everything even across the board, then that works. It mechanically functions. It doesn't make for some, it created a dissonance between the narrative of Trek and the gameplay of Star Trek Adventures. I find that the tweaks and changes they made to species talents or species unique talents level out that balance. So the fact that you are now getting your species talent given to you when you choose a species doesn't create a terrible unbalancing effect. So the tweaks you see in the species talents are largely to balance the power level there. So we are at a very similar baseline, but we are now more narratively connected to the IP, and I think that's a good thing. How that works functionally is what we're here to talk about and what we're going to do to start with. We have 2 folks who are Andorians. We have one who is a joint Trill. We have 1 Beta Zed, and we have 1 mixed species Beta Zed. What that means is they have access to the species talents for their given species. We're not necessarily going to read through every little detail involved, but we will do is go ahead and just talk about what it takes to convert. And that's pretty simple. You are playing an Andorian. If either Dave or Adam, you want to tell us what the species talent is for Andorians?
Okay. The Andorian species talent seems to go along well with how Adam and I play. Is intense, where basically if you spend a threat to get an extra d20, you generate a bonus momentum that basically you need to spend immediately.
Excellent. And going back to the phrase species talent, it is technically species ability. That is the mental gymnastics that I'm going to have to get used to performing in my brain. Who knows? By the time we start season 3, I will probably have that nomenclature.
We're correct. Going to be tripping over those words for the foreseeable future. So bear
absolutely
with us.
Yes, as we're a podcast and this is audio, we're going to do our best, but they're likely to happen. And you know what, if they happen at your table, so be it. Have fun.
I'm an engineer, not an English major.
Yeah, I can't say that because you are an engineer and I was an English major. But so we're going to try our best to get that right. But even if you're at your own tables, playing at conventions, playing at your local shops, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. They are functionally the same thing. So as far as converting that part of your character sheets, you pretty much just had to add that. If you had already had its similar version, then you would just basically move that to a new spot on the new character sheet. If you had to do that, that would create an opening where you get to pick another talent. In your case, Dave, did you have that species talent in 1E? or something similar to that?
No, I did not, although I will say it does go along nicely with bold engineering.
Excellent. In your case, when you're doing this part of the conversion, there's no changes at all, just adding a new thing to the new sheet.
Yes.
And Adam, what was your experience with Ocean?
I'll be honest, it took me a little bit to figure out where it was on the builder, but it did add it in. It wasn't one that I had seen before, so it wasn't one that I had chosen, but again, it definitely fits the Andorian mindset.
I should note that both Adam and Dave are clearly students of SRAM, and as our best on-screen version of an Andorian, it makes it very easy and fun to do that. I actually love doing NPC Andorians. I don't do it on this show as much because we've got you guys, but when I'm at conventions, I throw a lot of Andorians at it. So it is a lot of fun, and like you said, the talent makes sense as a species trait, so it fits really easily.
You did well with that one. So.
Absolutely.
Just on the mechanical side, because then I'll roll into my species ability. It functions in such a way when you purchase one or more D20s with threat, you generate one bonus momentum for each D20 purchase. So if they give you 6 threat, they get 3 momentum on the back end, but it can't be saved. So the intense species ability for the Andorians, that's when you spend threat to buy dice, whereas Trill, they are patient. And when you succeed at a task where you purchased one or more D20s with momentum, you generate one bonus momentum for each D20 purchased. And again, that momentum can't be saved. It must be used immediately. So I love the dichotomy of the fact that I always purchased Cautious X department because I'm a huge proponent of the momentum spend and not so much with the threat spend. So I think that's a nice dichotomy between the patient captain and the intense first officer and engineer. And then me having to kind of rein, no, guys, come back to center a little.
I like the way that works. And I think that's a nice function. It's another one of those situations that 2E is doing a great job of utilizing and focusing on mechanics that drive narrative or support narrative, something that a lot of games struggle to do. They'll have really cool mechanics that are fun or can work at the table, but they don't necessarily sync up with narrative. Some games, that's not so much of a big deal because you're not dealing with an IP, so preconceived notions do not typically exist. Star Trek, it's there and it can exist. So when the mechanics support that, it's really helpful.
Right. So now, while the Trill has the patient species ability, each species in the main book also does have access to 2 talents that are focused around the species for the Trill, one of which is the joined Trill talent. Mechanically, it's effectively the same as it was in first edition. So I retain that as one of my 4 talents. So that not only is the Trill species patient, but I'm also a joined Trill. So I'm like extra Trill. Similarly, the Vulcan species has a mental toughness type of thing, whereas the nerve pinch is still a talent.
And I think that, again, the mechanics are supporting the narrative where there are things that you are and there are things that you choose to be or happen to you through the life path of your character. And so whether or not you're joined or not, you had to go through an academy, go to school, be approved, go through this program, do all these things, then you get joined, right? So that's a choice versus you are.
I'm still waiting for the Trek scene where there's a scene with a Vulcan in there and they knock someone out and the dude turns to him and is like, why didn't you just neck pinch him? He's like, I don't know how to do that.
I think that would be awesome. And I almost wanted them to do that in Picard season 3 with the Vulcan gangster in District 9, like him having that opportunity and not doing it. There just really wasn't a good scene for that. But if that had happened, that would have been like perfect. Yeah. That's definitely the scene we're looking for. All right. So we've covered the 3 folks who have done some work on their character real quickly before I move on. Joe, so as we're looking at the conversions you've done to this stage, you added your species ability. Mm-hmm. You retained your previous species talent in your four. That is the totality of your conversions at this stage, correct?
There are a couple more, but at this stage, yes.
Excellent. All right. So now we're going to move on to Glenn and Lacey. We have a beta Zed and we have a mixed species who happens to be part beta Zed, part human. So similar things exist here. Joe had commented on it earlier, and I like the way he worded it, so I'm going to lean on him for the wording on this. But when you're playing a mixed species, how do your species ability and or talents work, Joe?
Yeah, so if you go to this section on the mixed heritage on page 99 of the new core rulebook, the character has the option to choose one of the two species abilities from their mixed heritage parents. And then they do have access to the talents from both species. Now, beta Zeds have a really interesting setup because their species ability is essentially the ability to take the empathy or telepathy talent. So if Glenn wished to, he could have the human species ability of Faith of the Heart and then use one of his other four remaining talents to take the beta Zed talent empathy. So you could get the best of both.
Oh. And that perfectly exemplifies, again, the real strength of mechanics matching narrative. So depending on how you're playing things, whether you're Belana Torres, Lieutenant Kendall Najjar, or other folks, you can see where it makes sense to have either the human species ability or not, and go from there.
Now, to be fair, Lee, this is a unique one to beta Zeds because their species ability is take this talent.
Yep. Almost not common.
Almost all the other species, their species ability is a new, unique mechanical effect that has been added to the systems.
Beta Zeds are cool. Given that, in your case, Lacey, you would simply add that talent based on your species ability. So if you already have that talent, because that's what you had to have in 1E, you basically take that talent, move it into the new section on the new sheet, and that would free up a space. So you could take maybe another beta Z one if you wanted a different one, or if you want any other talent, you've got a free talent to select.
I'll have to review the human ability to determine.
Additionally, so the way it works is if you do have a mixed heritage character, you identify which of the two genotypes, for lack of a better word, is your primary species. And from there is once you determine which species ability you have and which attribute modifiers you get at stage one during the life path creation. So humans get the option to pick any plus one in any three, but all the other species have plus one in three attributes set. So you would do that. Now, the mixed heritage character does get the trait of both species. So they are both Vulcan and human for Spock, for example, as they use in the book. So where those traits could come into effect, you could be in plus one or minus one difficulty. But for the purposes of the attributes, your species and species ability, there is a primary and a secondary.
And I don't recall how we set up your character ability scores. I would feel very comfortable in this situation saying don't worry about that part of it, because with human being one of your two species, you would get to choose whatever you want. So whichever way we did it the first time doesn't matter now, because as a human character, you would still get to do the same thing anyway. Okay. Mathematically, it's identical as far as the attribute scores go. So it really is which species ability do you wish, and then how do you choose to adjust your available talents, if any?
Okay. When I use one of my values to spend or gain determination, I may also add one momentum to the group pool as the human ability?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
There's that. And then we've already talked about what the beta's ability is as well.
Right. Obviously, Najjar has to go with empath. That's been part of his character since the beginning. So it's just a matter of how I rearrange the others.
Yeah, it's more about where you put that. You have the things, where you put it is really the decision that you're wrestling with. I'm going to shift over to Lacey while you ponder that one, Glenn. And so, Lacey, after making the shift, did that open up any talent spaces for you? And if so, how would you like to fill that void?
So on my character sheet before, the talent I had was not either empathy or telepathy. It was actually the extrasensory perception. So I think that for my character, it would make sense to take the trait of empathy as well as keeping the extrasensory perception.
Sounds good. In the case of Lacey, the conversion is as simple as adding the new species ability and adding the appropriate named traits that go on the sheet for species, Beta Z. I didn't say this earlier, but everybody else would have added Andorian, and Doin Trill as yes. One of their named traits. And in the case of Glenn, you would add human and Betazoid as your named trait. And then we're back to Glenn.
For now, for today, for the sake of simplicity and moving forward, by assuming that I go primary human, then I automatically get Faith of the Heart. Then I would spend that extra trait to buy empathy. And that leaves me even with the way I am now. Everything would stay the same. Yep. I'd still have Chief of Security, Bold Security, Lead Investigator, Defensive Training, and Empath as the ones that I picked up after. And I just add the species trait of Faith of the Heart. And I should be square. However, I would like to reserve the right, if that's okay with you, to alter that should I choose to, if as I'm reading through the character creation rules and the available talents, etc., I see a build that I think would make more sense for Najjar.
I am absolutely comfortable with that. It is a new addition. There's a lot of new bells and whistles to look at and see how they interact. I'm fine with that. That does make sense. For the sake of the conversion process, though, folks, it really converting the characters to this stage is as simple as what we've just shown. You have a species based on what you had on your 1E character. You take the appropriate species traits, abilities, add them. In the cases where that creates a void, you then pick a new thing to fill that void. And that's it. It is really not more complex than that to this stage. I'm going to go back to Joe. Joe, what was the next thing after handling the species bit that you did to convert your character?
Yeah, so I stepped through the life pass again, and then the next point of interest was in step 4 in the career path. All the officers in Starfleet now get the Starfleet officer trait. So Now the great scene where Riker and them show up in the bar in uniform and all the shady characters are not wanting to talk to them. That's definitely a -1 difficulty because they're Starfleet officers. Yeah. And being a Starfleet officer hurts you when dealing in certain scenarios. So I think we've always played with that, and it was in first edition just built in to the fundamental understanding that Starfleet officers are extremely competent characters and therefore didn't start out at level 1 like a Dungeons and Dragons character, but they were top tier professionals. I think this just mechanizes that even further.
Yeah, the way I would describe that for those who are brand new to Star Trek or wondering how to convert that is to start with a basic description of traits as it pertains to characters. Traits are things that your characters are known by or known as. They are things that on first glance you are introduced to somebody and you're like, oh, you're this. Now that introduction could be as simple as they walk in a uniform. It could be as simple as you're of a given species. There's information transmitted simply at a glance in a moment when you first encounter this individual, and it impacts how people react. I would consider a way to think of traits, and it's not the only way to consider it, but it is certainly your first impression. A given NPC's first impression of your character will come in the form of traits. And as far as whether that is a positive thing in a scene or a negative thing in the scene really depends more on that observing individual's belief. So if you're a criminal, you observe a law officer you have a certain way of thinking about that might be negative or worrisome. If you are a member of a victimized group, perhaps victimized by people in authority, you see a uniform from an official government source, you don't even have to be a criminal. You're going to look at that in a negative way, or that scene may not be good. That has nothing to say that people in that uniform are good or bad. It's about how the other individual perceives them. And I think that's very important, because this is one of those, depending on your tables, lines, and veils, it can come into play. Several of us involved in this cast either have been in the military or have family members who've been in the military. So it can be weird if you go into a game and all military people are portrayed as holier than thou, all great heroes, and or horrible, terrible, oppressive people. I think neither are ever true. And I also think that you have to look at your table and your lines and veils. And what this trait system does is allows a GM and the players through their session zeros or re-zeros to really say, this is the trait, how you want to use that at your table, that's up to you and your individual table. So it's a very useful mechanic. It works universally, but it can be applied very specifically.
And 2E has done a fantastic job. They've broken traits out into four main subcategories: a situation trait, a location trait, character traits, and equipment traits. And there's a great example. They've got three bullet points in the book that says, because I am, insert character trait, this activity is easier, harder, possible, impossible, or unchanged. So that's because I am a Starfleet officer, this activity is easier, this activity is harder. And so I think this little formula of, because equipment trait, I have a phaser, this activity of intimidating this guy is easier. This is some of the streamlining where traits existed in 1E and were there, and they were like, they help or hurt. And so it took some while to grab it as a concept, but you read on page 250, 251, and boom, anyone should be able to just hit the ground running at full speed.
And I would say that my recollection of season one, even when we were stumbling at the beginning and learning the system as we were going, we really played into that a lot. And whether it came up mechanically in a die roll or not, we really played into these types of traits, whether we had them written down or not. What this is basically doing is giving you a baseline, or these are the traits you have. I believe towards the middle of season one, the crew who's part of the Zindi mission got commendations and received some traits. And so they are known by those things. And for people who are in the know about that situation and this crew was involved in that, that will have a trait benefit or negative depending on that individual's perspective. Definitely something we have played with for a while, so it's not terribly new to us, but it is something that is being called out more specifically and will appear. So everybody has their various species traits, which would be recorded.
So that was a very long answer to your question, Lee Wanika, of I wrote Starfleet officer on my sheet.
Yeah, yeah. Longer to explain than it took to do it. Yep. All right. And following that, anything else that you needed to do to convert over?
The next thing was to pick a pastime, which is a focus, but it is a focus that is more of a hobby or passion that is not connected with your job and is unlikely to come up in play, because there was a lot of people, myself included, with one of my previous characters, took as one of my six limited focus in ice sculpture, because that was their hobby and their passion and talent. And in their quarters, there was always a ice sculpture in various stage of work in progress. But that did limit me to five, quote unquote, useful focuses. Because rarely, except for the one time I did use an ice sculpture as an improvised weapon to bludgeon an attacker, and got a critical expansion because I was using the ice sculpture, my GM let me apply that to the situation. It rarely came up, and it felt like a role-playing penalty. And so I think The team at Modifius rightly saw that Starfleet officers especially are more than just what they do on the bridge, and so added this past times thing, and which, funnily enough, we incorporated in our short trek of Commander Tobor's love of alien cuisine, which is, yep. So during that one, he's always cooking and doing culinary as his hobby.
And even in season one, when we were on the shoreleave planet, Tobor had, in at least one scene, and it may have been two if memory serves, was very focused on the meal that was being served and trying the local cuisine, like made the comment. So definitely something that has been played all along, and to now have some mechanical support behind it to put on the sheet.
And one thing to note is in the book, it says pick a pastime, but you'll notice on the character sheet, it says pastimes. So there is opportunities for you as your character grows to add more pastimes as it makes sense without mechanically penalizing your character.
Absolutely. It is not something for many of us that we may have had on our characters. So many of the SDA characters I've created, I took the focus there because I felt it was more important to be narratively cool than to be mechanically cool. Effectively, select a pastime, add it to the sheet. If it is something you always had, then what you get to do is pick a new focus. So I'm going to go around the horn again to see what you chose and whether or not that created an opening or not and how you filled that opening. But I'm going to start with Glenn.
I have no idea what my pastime is going to be. I'm not certain I'll be able to decide it during these few minutes.
Okay, fair enough.
That's an important piece to the character, what he's into outside of uniform. And I've got some thoughts, but I just, it's not something that I'm prepared to just throw down on right this second.
So that actually gives a great opening for another thing. If you're converting your character and you come to a spot where you're not really sure, this is where you get to institute a little creation and play mechanism to what we're doing. This conversion can include elements of creation and play. The beauty of a pastime is you may not have actually use that in game. If it hasn't come up, it hasn't come up. So at some later point, you could say, hey, this sounds like a good pastime. I'd like to add this. And that's absolutely perfectly fine. It's actually codified in the rules. It's part of creation in play. So you are absolutely fine for that. The one question I would ask is, of your other focuses, do you think any of those could be pastimes or not?
Not really, no. I've got emergency medicine, criminal psychology, behavior analysis, forensic investigation, starship, starbase tactical systems, shuttlecraft operations, and survival. Maybe he really likes camping, but I haven't really put that in yet.
Yep. And that is a good gauge for whether you should shift something in space or come up with something new, either immediately or in the future. Looking at your existing focuses, what that really allows you to do is kind of figure out which path you're going to go by, right? If you've got something that could or should easily convert, let's say you had a focus of bowling, that's probably better served as a pastime unless you're some kind of professional bowler, entertainer, and at which point, then maybe it should be a focus and not a pastime. Your call. So don't worry about making that choice here today or in this moment, this session or whatever. When you're ready to put that in, you can put that in at that time. It does not have to be an immediate now. And I'm actually very glad that you don't have that answer because that really gives us the opportunity to talk about that. I'm going to shift over to Lacey.
I'm actually surprisingly prepared for this. Because I've been thinking about it since we had brought it up earlier today. I was thinking that part of the backstory while developing this character was that she came from a peaceful society and is seeking out with her love of people. I thought I would give her a portrait painting pastime as she meets people, maybe is inspired by them. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
I love it. That is a perfect example of what a pastime could be and how that can interact with your character. So,
oils or acrylic?
Good question. Yeah. I think probably oils.
Traditional.
Or holo portraits.
It's nice. Now you gotta get that tangible. Is it really painting if you don't have to like the get the resin there or whatever, like out between the fingernails. And I say that as I look at the models because I just started painting again about a month ago or so. Shifting gears, we're going to go right to you, Dave. How about you? What do you have for a pastime?
I'd given it some thoughts and bounced around to several things, like maybe starship design or martial arts, but I thought those sounded too much like things that probably ought to be regular focuses. But then it hit me about how I've been playing the character and things have gone in the game, so I went with conspiracy theories.
Excellent. When Josh hears this, I can just see him giggling with glee. Like everybody here except for Joe has known Josh and has met Josh in person, so you can literally see him bouncing in his seat right now when he gets really excited, and it's awesome. Like, that just fills my heart with so much joy, because he's going to love that. And Joe has seen him do that, because we see each other when we're playing, so it's not an unfamiliar sight, but it's almost like a separate level of, this is like the coolest thing to watch ever, is when he does that live and in person. I love it. I live for it. I try to find ways to create it. It's actually a mission in life for me. That is my focus. Not even a pastime. That is a legit focus for me. And in choosing that, clearly because it's a brand new thing that we've talked about, hasn't been on your character sheet before, you had to make no real adjustments to your 1E character sheet. You simply add the new thing to the new sheet, and you have moved through that phase. And a similar situation with you, Lacey. You add the new thing to the new sheet. No changes need to be made. Adam?
Yeah. Ocean grew up as the child of two constables on a frontier world. So he had a lot of time to himself, and he would watch the ships that would come in and so forth. And some of them were just the standard supply ships and whatnot, but others would be odd. And he was always interested in the odd ships. And he started building models of some of the ships that he saw, and he could talk to what they are. His pastime is actually obscure starships. He's built models of them. He's like the guy who can pop the hood of a 67 Chevy and tell you what all the things are. He's the guy you put on the stand. What was the movie with Joe Pesci? My cousin Vinny.
My cousin Vinny.
Where Marissa Tomei basically just calls out this really obscure thing about a specific old car. He just has those random facts.
The tire pattern and the differential on the skid. And if you ever, guaranteed free determination, if at any point you can narratively institute my biological clock is ticking while cocking your leg and tapping it on the ground, I'm just going to put that out there. That'll work for me.
Adam, I'm not sure everyone will hear you say that to Lee Winica.
Yeah, I'll pass on that one.
Yeah, maybe Claire will be cross with me on that one. No, okay, excellent. Another good pastime. And again, another situation where you're adding a thing. No other changes are required. Just to refresh the audience, what were your other focuses?
My other focuses are targeting systems, strategy and tactics, criminal organizations, security system, lead by example, and jury rigging. And then, of course, the Epsilon detection investigation and clandestine operative.
Yes. I will at this point just institute, I believe everybody on the crew, and Glenn, you may not have been present for the session where I did this, actually has the clandestine operations Epsilon protocol focus. That was something I gave to the crew based on over a season and a half of gameplay. So you get a new focus just for that. That's in addition to whatever comes standard on the character.
That's the same as the Epsilon species detection?
Yes. Correction. Adam and Glenn got the clandestine version of that because they're more on the investigative piece of it as far as like the way they're maneuvering spying type of thing, whereas yours is more focused on the detection. So I believe you and Dave got the detection one and that. And Joe, I think you have a choice. I don't recall off the top of my head which one I gave you, but I think you already have that written down, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, if you don't, you get a choice between the two.
I've got the protocol system.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so you got the protocol system version. So it was slightly different for different crew members based on how they interacted with the overall arc that we are in. But you all have a focus.
You brought them up during the quick treks, so we weren't all on the same call.
That's why they're slightly different. Everybody got them at different times. All right. So we have that piece done. And Joe, what was next on the list for 1E to 2E conversion?
Equipment is separate, but the next thing was going through the character role and confirming that They still work the same way as they did in first edition. For the COXO, they do, but for chief of security, chief engineer, chief medical officer, they've been slightly changed. So the security team, engineering team, medical team, they are now considered equipment and are purchased through momentum during a scene. So the chief engineer, when on board a ship, is able to purchase engineering teams to assist for a minus one discount, so it's free. Similarly, the chief of security can have a security team at minus one cost, and a chief medical officer could have a medical team for a minus one opportunity cost. But for the COXO, those abilities stayed the same.
Okay. So COXO, no changes to your role, and everybody else changes as far as how they interact. For right now, since we're not engaging in a full conversion, you won't need to do anything, but just be aware when we do say we're fully on 2E rules now, whenever that date begins, you'll want to familiarize yourself with the new details on the roles. So even that becomes, from a conversion standpoint, very easy to do. You change nothing about the existing character other than the details of the thing are modified. So you just want to know what that modification is. And following that, so I'm going to nutshell this real quick. When converting an existing 1E character to 2E, the first and most primary thing is take a look at your species, select your new species trait, and in some cases, that will mean you're shifting a talent from one location to another, opening up a space to get a new talent. In many cases, it doesn't do that at all. You get a whole brand new thing, and everything else stays the same there. Depends on what kind of character you have previously built versus now.
Just to bounce back to something we covered earlier on mixed heritages to make sure that we're not putting incorrect information out there, I'm not positive 100% because I certainly have not done as much reading as Joe has, but just in the time I've been trying to create Najar through the BC Holmes tool, it does not support the ability for the Betazoid to set human as their primary half and still take empathy later. And in looking at the actual rules in the PDF, when you mix species, you get the trait of both, but not the species ability. And the species ability specifically states that is the part when you're looking at the Betazoid race where you choose telepathy or empathy. It doesn't say it under the trait part that you do get. It's under the ability part that you don't get if human is primary. I don't think you get the best of both worlds there.
Sure. So I can speak to that more specifically. There's a couple different rule systems that are interacting to create that effect here. And there may be a little bit of how are you running some things at your table, but I believe the rules do fully support how I view it and how Joe described it earlier. Essentially, the pieces that we talked about that remain are if you were to select a mixed species, human, Betazoid, if you were to select the species ability faith of the heart as a human, basically your primary genetic piece, you still get the two traits, the trait being human, the trait being Betazoid. Certain talents, specifically those that fall under the esoteric talent tree, are basically GM authorized anyway. You'd have that because you have the Betazoid trait and that particular subset of esoteric talents are typically available for beta Zeds, a GM should reasonably assume that you would have access to those also. So that's how you would do that. So there is a functional way to do it within the rules. It is not as simple as you automatically get to the thing. It is actually by way of, do you have access to the esoteric talents? I view having a trait gives you access to that esoteric talent. I would say the same thing for Spock, any Vulcan esoteric talents that would come up is how I would view that. So that's how we got from A to C. I don't think earlier in the discussion we did a great job of describing that pathway. So you had a valid point, and I'm glad we brought that up as that's important information to give to the audience and for each of us who are playing these characters to actually know. Does that kind of make a little bit more sense? And I know I didn't speak to the BC Holmes piece of it. It's a little more complicated there, but as long as we're putting things together on a paper or PDF format, that's how I would get to and why I feel absolutely secure in saying that makes a lot of sense for the narrative we have, one, played for a year and a half, and two, within the mechanics that we're using today.
Cool.
All right. So we covered the species bit. So following species abilities and any talent changes that need to be done for your 1E to 2E conversion, we would move right to pastimes. You select a pastime. If you have an existing focus that should better be described as a pastime, shift its location, select a new focus. If you're happy with all your focuses in the category that they're in, select a pastime, add it to your sheet. Following that is traits. At, I believe it was stage 4, but during your life path, when you become a Federation officer or a member of the Klingon military forces or member of the Tal Shiar, whatever organization you're part of, when you go through your life path, what you then have the ability to do is add the appropriate trait there. I would imagine with the Tal Shiar, you might get 2 traits, one for that and one for whatever you publicly face, but Starfleet intelligence, you might get 2. That's a GM player discussion based on the game you're running and how you run at the table. But basically, assign the traits based on where you are at the appropriate part in your life path, simply adding a thing to a new section on a new sheet. And that's it. That's the character piece of conversion as far as just your character. We specifically did not tackle equipment in this discussion because, as forementioned, we are not converting all of our rules right now. We're just doing the character piece. So we're still going to be using the 1E rules for equipment. So I'm not going to go into that now. At some point in the future, when we do switch over, we'll have another discussion about how to convert your equipment. But honestly, that's pretty easy. Just use the new equipment out of the new book. It's really that simple. When you do all those rules, the equipment's written. We're not actually creating anything new. It's just copying the new information on the new sheet. So it should be pretty easy. That's converting a character in 1E. We took about 45 minutes or an hour for 5 people to talk about their characters at great length and explain things as we're talking to an audience about how to do this and what we've done with our own characters. Honestly, if you are doing this on your own, after having listened to all this, you probably could do this in just a few minutes. It's really not terribly lengthy other than thinking through the decisions. And at the end of the day, it's very okay to not have all the answers. Creation plays a thing. So if you don't want to fill something out in that moment because you don't have a great idea, perfectly fine. Talk to your GM. I'm sure they're going to let you do that. And then you can create that and play as you go. It can be really fun to improv something like that at the time. I've done that in 1E with a couple players in expeditions, and it works perfectly fine. So the free quick start guide is there. If you're playing any of the species there, you'll have a list of the species talents for those species. So it's an easy, quick matter there. You can get the quick start free of charge on DriveThruRPG or the Modifius website directly. We'll have links in the descriptions below. Other than that, I think we're it for session ReZero. I do want to thank the audience for listening, and I want to thank the cast for taking a bit of our regular playtime to go into a more detailed discussion here. These are questions that are asked a lot on the various boards. I see Joe constantly responding to these things. He sees me constantly responding to these things. The fact that we were able to do this and put this so people can catch it on Spotify, on YouTube, wherever they're listening to us, I think is going to be very useful for folks trying to understand how easy this conversion is and tamping down some of the fears about the conversion, because it's really not all that complex. But thank you all for your time, and have a wonderful day.